Good afternoon and welcome to the concurrent session 7. This session is an update on the experience investigations and also a presentation on trends in mortality. Our two presenters are Brylan Cummings and Eddie Fabrizio, who need no introduction, I believe. But for those of you who might be new to the industry, Eddie, I've got his bio here, but I think you know Eddie is the person who produces the last industry experience table for mortality, trauma and TPD, and he's now at KPMG. And Brylan also, you've seen her present many times in the last 7 years on mortality, TPD, disability income experience. So without further ado, I will invite Brylan to come and give us an update on the latest of the investigations.
Thank you, Hua. So my goal today is to present some analysis and some ideas and then open the floor up for discussion. So Eddie and I will probably talk for about 30 minutes and then we're hoping that there'll be a fair bit of discussion. What I'm going to talk about is I'm going to talk about the trends that we've seen in claims experience based on the FSC KPMG experience investigations. And then one of the things that I was interested in when we looked at those trends is what's happening in mortality. And so we then did some further analysis, which Eddie's going to present, which is looking at the trends in the insured lives mortality and contrasting it with what's happening at the Australian population level to try and get a better understanding of what's going on in the insured population as to why, you know, things are happening in the Australian population aren't happening in the insured lives population. Just go down. Excellent. So what I want to do is just start with, I guess, telling you all about the experience investigations and where we're at. So essentially for both lump sum and income protection retail experience investigation, we have data up to 2011 and we've reported on that data. It's worthwhile just looking, though, at how far we've come. So in sort of December 2008, we issued our first report, which was for the lump sum 2007 experience. And since then, we've done a whole lot of investigations for lump sum. We've added some for income protection. And I know that some people kind of can be despondent about the fact that we're standing here in 2015 and saying that the latest experience investigation is only up to 2011. But that is actually a remarkable progress for us to have come through in this period of time, and it's also an excellent result by international standards in terms of the turnaround between data coming in and the experience investigation coming out. But we never rest on our laurels, so we're hoping that we'll get the data in for 2012 and 2013 for the income protection. We're currently collecting that data, and we hope to have a report out on that later in the year. And we're also collecting the 2012 data for lump sum. So hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have data up to about 2013 results, and by the end of next year we might be up to the end of 2015 and essentially get the experience investigations up to date so that we're reporting, you know, within about 12 months of the actual end of the time frame. And if we achieve that, that'll be actually an amazing accomplishment and far, far better than anyone else in the world is achieving. So it's something to aim for and hopefully we'll get there. But we shouldn't, I guess, underestimate where we've come to so far and the achievement that is. The new income protection standard table, you'll all be pleased to know, everyone who's been phoning me on a weekly basis will be pleased to know that that is coming out very shortly. We're expecting it to be out sort of in the next couple of weeks, and there's a presentation to all the contributors on that Thursday next week. So I've just got a few slides where I'm only looking at the trends in experience. And this is the first slide, and it's the one which prompted me to have a chat to Eddie and say we really should investigate this further. So mortality, you can see, has improved. It's improved at about 0.4% per annum since 2004 to 2006. And what you can see in this graph, and I'll just explain the graph to you briefly, is that the sort of the white line in the middle of each block of colour is the actual result, and it's all benchmarked against 2004 to 2006. So you can see the line for 2004 to 2006 is 100%, and then it's gone down from there. The block of colour either side is the 95% confidence interval. So it just gives you an idea of how significant the results are. So when I say it's improved by 0.4% per annum, you can also see that all those three sets of blue blocks all overlap, indicating that that is not a material improvement, and I couldn't put my hand on my heart and say we've had any improvement in mortality, because it's just not large enough to be significant. So it's one of those sort of defining things that we sort of take for granted that mortality will improve. We don't price for it in retail, but when it happens, we do reduce premium rates over time, and it does offset sort of worsening experience in trauma or TPD. And so it's something that we've taken for granted as an industry. And to see it sort of shrinking to 0.4% per annum is, I guess, it's a surprise for me, and it's what the thing that prompted me to get Eddie to talk about why that might be. Trauma. So trauma has worsened, particularly since 2006 to 2008. It's worsened at about 4% per annum, which is a significant result. So you can see that for this graph, the 2009 to 2011 experience is significantly higher than the 04, 06 or 06, 08 experience, indicating that trauma has worsened significantly since those previous investigations. This is for males. I haven't got the female graph up there, but it's very similar in terms of worsening. In fact, female experience worsened a bit more. TPD. So all of our friends over in the group insurance space have all been telling us about how bad TPD experiences in the group space. It's not surprising, therefore, that some of that has come over into the retail space. And we're seeing TPD increase at about 5% per annum, more or less. You know, a lot of it's happened since 2006, 2008, but some of it has happened since 04, 06 as well. And that result is, once again, significant. So if we're thinking of lump sum, you can see that we've got a tiny bit of mortality improvement, not enough that I could say it was significant, and worsening trauma and worsening TPD. Income protection. So the result I'm showing you here is for the male 1 month deferment period. The horizontal block, which goes across the entire graph there, is the average result for the entire period put together. And otherwise, you're seeing the individual years 07, 08, 09, 10 and 11. So the first thing that you look at, you say, oh, well, 2011 looks like it's a much better experience than the previous years. That's really fantastic. But these results are before IBNR. If we add in the IBNR, which is about 8%, you can see that 2011 incidence rates are pretty much the same level as we saw in the previous period. So we couldn't really say that incidence has improved in 2011, but at least we can say that it's probably stabilised, because when you can see in this graph, 09 and 10 were significantly higher than 07 and 08, so it was actually a good news story to see that 2011 was stable compared to the two previous years. Terminations. When we looked at terminations, we could see that termination experience was worsening through the period. 08 had lower terminations than 07, 09 lower than 2008, 2010 slightly better than 2009, and then 2011 looked like it was a really good news story. Looked like termination sort of rates were back up at the levels they were in 2007. We think, talking to companies when we did these results, we think that what we're actually seeing here is, I guess, all the one-offs, that in 2011 a lot of companies did a big claims clean-up. And what you had was the impact of that coming through. So when we do the next investigation, we're not going to be very surprised if we see the 2012 and 2013 are back having low termination rates again. Just to put it all together, you can see here that the impact on claim cost, if you sort of combine the incidents and the termination together, you can see that 2009-2010, the sort of the claim cost went from being about 150% of what you'd expect from the standard table to around 200% of the standard table. 2011, we do see it going back to the previous levels, reflecting that termination, that good news story in the terminations. But once again, we don't know whether that's real or whether it was just sort of, well, it was real in the sense that it happened, but we don't know whether it was sustainable or whether it was just a temporary one-off increase. So there is the bright and positive story of claims experience investigations. I'm now going to turn the floor over to Eddie, who's going to talk about the mortality and the differences between insured lives and population. Thank you. Yeah, move down. I did the
roll. Down. All right. Thank you, Brian. I have the lovely topic of talking about mortality improvement. And for those people who work in YRT business, one would argue, why do we really care about mortality improvement? Since joining consulting, I've seen a lot of different approaches that people are using to update pricing bases. And where mortality improvement does seem to come into YRT products for some reason or another. A lot of it's around how people are updating the mortality assumptions from last time they sat them. So a lot of companies obviously use three-year rolling bases and say the midpoint and let's project forward to whatever happens to be for the next period of YRT. And obviously that needs a mortality assumption, and more than likely most people are still looking at using population mortality as a thing. Not that we're seeing very much of it, obviously, in business projections. Lovely APRA with their requirements of five-year-plus business projections in a lot of cases. People are thinking about whether you should allow for mortality improvement in those projections. Obviously, there's been a lot of underwriting changes over the last 10 years, so people are thinking about how do you actually quantify some of those changes in isolation. And although not a particular big one at the moment, when you think about whether you want to go into doing level premium type contracts, traditionally in the UK, when people do level premium, they do project forward mortality improvements. Some companies in Australia have done that, some don't. Possibly with some of the Trowbridge changes, that may or may not come through. There may be a bit more emphasis on level premium contracts, and therefore you may want to consider how you want to come about doing your mortality assumption for a level premium contract. Obviously, with level premium contracts, you don't get the issue of people churning their policy like a YRT policy does, that you keep on getting cheaper rates for the existing policyholder. I think, as Brian said, one of the interesting findings from our experience investigations is that mortality for insured lives is improving at less than 1%. For those people that look at population mortality, it's generally been over 2%. For some of us who have been involved in experience investigations 10-plus years ago, and I see a lot of faces here that used to be on the old Institute of Actuaries ones, we did always notice that mortality seemed to improve quicker for insured lives than population. So we're trying to understand a little bit why things have changed around. The data we had for doing this is obviously the FSC, KPMG, I'm not too sure which order it's supposed to come in, Braylon, but investigations we do. There's still, for those people who know where to find them, you can still find the old Institute of Actuaries mortality investigations. The last one, I think, was for 98, 99. We did consider whether we should use that data going back, but there are a lot of differences between the data from the Institute of Actuaries investigations versus the FSC ones. The most notable one is that the old experience investigation used to cover whole of life and traditional business, and that made up 80 to 90% of the whole experience investigation. For those who don't know, the FSC KPMG investigations only cover term insurance mortality. They do not cover the whole of life and endowment contracts. So it was going to be very difficult to try to get the old data and standardise it. I don't even know where the old data sits anymore. I see Anthony there. He might remember. He probably still has copies of the data sets. Who knows? But we'll see how we go. Someone knows how to still use Oracle. What we did then is compare that to Australian population tables. Rather than using the government actuaries Australian life table, because it's a slightly different period, we use the ABS life tables. For those who don't know, the ABS actually puts out a life table every year, which is on the basis of the average of the last 3 years. So in this case, we use the 2011 and 2006 tables, and that is the average of the experience for 2009, 2011, 2004. So that way we could overlap with the FSC investigations. So what do we notice? Normally when you hear about population mortality improving at 2% and insured lives obviously being less, one of the things you've got to remember is that the distribution of the in-force for insured lives is very, very different to the population. When you look at the insured lives experience, a lot of it is in that 40 to 60 type range. When you go to population improvement, you get a lot of population in the 60 plus, which don't normally earn insured lives. So what we did was look at standardising the population mortality rates using the insured lives distribution. And so what we see here is that for the majority of ages, insured lives mortality has been less than population. You see more of it at young ages, where there's obviously been a fairly big improvement in both, but mostly in the population. You then get probably to that 40 to 60 age group, where obviously that's where most of the insured lives experience is sitting. And you could see there for insured lives, there's actually been deterioration in mortality. Obviously, there's confidence intervals a lot around that, which Rowan talked about. But the fact that there's been absolutely negative to zero improvement, while there's still been improvement in the population, makes you question what's happened in the insured lives experience for that to happen. Obviously, when you get to the older ages, it's getting very close together again. Once you start getting past age 60, the volume of data, obviously, in the insured lives experience study starts to fall down pretty quickly, but it's still a substantial amount of experience there. For females, a bit similar at the younger ages, but once you get to that middle to older age group, there's not much difference between population and insured lives. Once again, it makes you question why for males it's so much different from females. Things we're going to look into a bit more next. One of the things to remember, and the same on the male chart, is that the line for insured life should be a little bit lower because there's no allowance for IBNRs in the 2009 to 11 statistics. So that probably brings the mortality improvement down by another 0.25%. But once again, it's again this continual trend that it seems to be lower for insured lives than it is for the population. Now, these are just some of the reasons we thought that could be driving this. The obvious one also is always about differences between smoker proportions in the insured lives versus the population. We know in insured lives that the proportion of smokers has generally been much less than it is in the population, whether it's because of the process of telling smokers they need to be charged only twice as much as non-smokers. And therefore, movements in the proportion of smokers between population and insured lives is going to be a driver of some of the improvement. There's question marks about average policy duration. The idea is that the longer the policy duration, the higher the mortality is, and therefore as the insured lives portfolio matures more, the average policy duration is getting longer, and therefore that's going to drive some of the increase in mortality. Underwriting, which we'll go into, for those who have been in the risk market for a while, there were huge changes in the way YRT business has been underwritten over the last 10 to 15 years. Once again, some of that may be driving it. One of the ones I will get onto, which probably explains the difference between males and females, is around cause of claim. And if you think about what the big improvements in population mortality have been and how that impacts insured lives, and some other demographic changes. Not too sure how easy this is to read, but this is comparing the proportion of smokers in the population and insured lives over time. We generally see that the proportion of smokers in the population has been dropping quicker than it has for insured lives. Strangely enough, in these particular smoker surveys, at the older ages, there seem to be increasing proportions of smokers in both the population and insured lives. I did see a more recent smoker survey come out, which for population brought it back down again, but for insured lives, it hasn't changed in the most recent study. It does make you wonder why we're getting more smokers at those older ages in the insured life population, whether the healthy non-smokers, which I would have thought most people are lapsing out and potentially the smokers are staying in. But there's some increases happening there. But also you see that the changes, differences between population and insured lives are a lot more at the younger ages. And once again, that might explain why there's a bigger difference between mortality improvement between insured lives and population at those younger age groups. Average policy duration. The graduated table for Australia only has a selection period of 2 years. Sorry, all this data here is only looking at insured lives experience with durations 2+. So it's theory taken out the selection effect. There are a lot of debates going around. If you talk to the reinsurers, they'll say selection periods go out for 20+ years. If you look at US graduated tables, they have selection periods of 25 years. If you look at the UK, their standard tables have a selection effect of 5 years. The latest experience study we did in Australia, the FSC one for Australia, for males, you can potentially say there's a 5-year selection period. For females, it's pretty obvious it's still only 2 years. When we did the graduation for the standard table, whatever it was, a year or so ago, there seemed to be very little evidence of doing more than 2 years. I think the debate's still going on that. But on the assumption that longer average policy durations lead to higher mortality, and we compare what's happened with the average durations in the insured lives between, you know, 2005 to 2010, we generally see that the average durations have been getting longer, much more so at the older ages compared to the younger ages. So once again, this would lead to, in theory, mortality of the insured lives going up. And then that counteracts with whatever improvements in there. So, but once again, if you look at what actually happened, they were very close at the older ages. Underwriting approach is probably one I hope to hear a lot of discussion with at the end of this session. For those who are around, during the 2000s, we saw a lot of changes in underwriting. We saw non-medical limits go from, you know, 500 to a million up to $2 million plus. And they seem to happen within about a 5-year period. We saw the advent of the underwriting rules engines being implemented in insurance companies. Debates about whether that was making underwriting more lenient or not to get cases through the system. We've seen, and it's come and gone over periods, about companies waiving loadings of plus 50s and plus 75s. I think I've seen every single company in the industry do it at one stage or another. Sometimes it's for those select few agents who happen to write 80% of your business and not for anyone else. But once again, you've got to think that has to feed into the mortality assumption. For our FSC investigations, we're picking up what people call standard. And I know a lot of companies who waive loadings do not record it in the system that they've waived the loading. And so when we get the data from companies, we can't do anything about it to try to screen out which cases are the ones where the waivings have been loaded, waived or not. We've also seen a lot of short-form underwriting come in the market. This is still agent-driven business, but a lot of companies have tried to come up for short-form to get the clean skins in and only go do a complete form if something's gone wrong in the short-form. Once again, there's question marks whether that leads more people coming through who otherwise would have been underwritten and loaded a bit more fuller. Takeover terms, been a bane of the industry, I think, for a long time. Some companies were taking over policies with no underwriting. One would argue that should take the healthy lives out of the long durations and push them into the short durations. But once again, does that lead to a selective lapsation type issue? The other one I think has been talked about a bit, especially around their sessions talking about obesity and BMIs. If anyone's looked at reinsurers' underwriting manuals over the last 10 years, what's been considered as a standard life is very different today than what it was 10 years ago. I remember probably more than 10 years ago, to get started getting rated on BMI, it was around 27. Andres might remember, might be lower than that. You go today and it's 33+. Now, some of the studies going around obesity says, well, if you look at the studies, that's a correct answer. Some will go the other ways. BMI is only one of them, but if you look at things like cholesterol, hypertension, all those parameters about what you should be rated at have all been ballooning out. That means more lives are standard. To the extent that that's leaking in slightly above average lives, once again, that will feed through into your portfolio. I talked a little bit about selective lapsation. In theory, if you make the underwriting easier for people to move, and we've talked, there's a lot of industry debate about churn, that should lead to selective lapsation. Once again, the experience studies at the moment aren't particularly showing a lot of selective lapsation in insured lives if there's longer policy durations. Is it still to come? Who knows? Cause of claim, and this is one of the ones I think is the main reason why there's a big difference between male and female in the relative improvement of mortality. The biggest improvement in population mortality has been driven by cardiovascular risk. You probably can't see it in the chart, but that one which is coming down very strongly is deaths as a result of cardiovascular risk. Normally when you think in underwriting approach, cardiovascular risk is probably the easiest one that underwriters can pick out. You know, once again, blood levels, hypertension, overweight, it's a relatively easy risk factor to pick up from your underwriting, and therefore it's an easy one to take out from a loading or exclusions. Obviously in the population, that's not something you can do because you don't underwrite who comes into Australia to some degree, although we'll talk about that one in a moment. So the extent that cardiovascular risk is probably a higher proportion of deaths in the population than insured lives, if you get more improvement in cardiovascular mortality, that's going to impact more population mortality more than it's going to impact the insured lives. Once again, if you think about cardiovascular risk, males are the predominant ones who get impacted by cardiovascular mortality. It is a much higher proportion of total deaths than it is for females. So if you're getting a huge improvement in your cardiovascular mortality, that's going to impact male population lives a lot more than it's going to impact insured lives or for females. And that may be some of the explanation. Some of the other demographic changes there. One is against rural and remote locations. Population studies all indicate that urban populations have much lower mortality than rural population mortality. Probably a small impact, but obviously there's a shift over time of people moving to more urban areas. I would expect the insured lives population is more dominated towards urban areas than remote compared to the population. Another one is about ethnicity. What I'm really talking about here is immigration to Australia. Back in around 2005, immigration was sitting about 100,000 per people. Around 2006 to 8, it jumped up to 300,000 per people. And obviously in the population, a healthy large portion of immigrants has some impact on the population mortality, because these people in most cases are self-selected as being healthy lives coming into Australia. Once again, is that filtering through into the insured lives? It's hard to tell. One of the other ones I think is more interesting is around occupation class. For mortality investigation, we don't record occupation class. We're sort of like hoping that with underwriting engines, people are recording occupation probably a bit more, and it might be interesting to start looking at that from a mortality point of view. We do know from our group experience that blue-collar workers have significantly higher mortality than white collars. One of the things we can see in our FSC investigations is if you look at the TPD experience where occupation's there, there has been an increasing proportion of business being sold to blue collars coming through on the in-force versus white collars. Once again, if that similar type of result is happening in the mortality side, which we don't know because we don't get the data, one could argue the insured lives experience should start deteriorating a little bit from occupation class. Obviously, it's a completely separate topic about why don't we rate for occupation class in our mortality and term insurance. Some countries do, but we'll leave that for another day. For me, the idea of this discussion and Rowan's presentation is just to give you ideas for discussion. We're really interested to hear what you think has been driving mortality for YRT in the past, and more importantly, where you see in the future what factors may be driving it. Because there is a good opportunity, I think, if people do look at level premium contracts or the way they want to do their business projections, that how you allow for improvement in YRT mortality could become pretty significant. And that, once again, how you do your underwriting, your class selection, your rating, impacts of selective lapsation may come in there. So with that, I think I open the floor to questions either on the FSC KPMG experience investigations or on this particular topic. Well, for that matter, any other topic you're really interested in talking about, I think we all be more than happy to have a chat around.
Okay, I'll open to the floor. Can I remind you to speak into the microphone and state your name before you ask your question?
Hi guys, I'll break the ice. Andrew Linfoot from Munich Re. You're aware that Munich Re did a 10-year experience analysis on our DI book, 2004-13. Unfortunately, we're not as optimistic that claims stabilised in 2011. I'm just trying to find out if we had a blip in 2011 that coincides with what you've seen. I'm not sure. In any case, for us, the claims experience in 12 and 13 were continued an upward trend over the 10-year period. Some of the differences, perhaps, I think we were covering about 70% of the products issued, so I don't think it was a credibility issue. We looked at amounts rather than by numbers, and I think we saw the effect stronger there. I think it was also important that we broke down incidents by sickness and by accident. So by accident, there was a trend over calendar year. So by accident year, although that was fairly modest. By policy duration, the claims incidents due to sickness cause was substantially increasing over the full 10-year period. And it took a lot of work to get to the bottom of all of those. Lastly, we did not see any evidence of sustained improvements or increases in termination rates over the period. There were certainly pockets where individual companies and maybe the experience as a whole did exhibit an improvement in 1 year, but inevitably it returned to the trend the following year. It seemed to be indicative of a clean-up, picking up the low-hanging fruit. Unfortunately, our conclusion, and this has been widely reported, is quite negative on the experience overall. So more of a comment than anything, but that's that.
Thank you, Andrew, for sharing that. Any comment from our speakers?
I could probably make a comment with some of the data we get for our FSC KPMG. Obviously, we're relying on data that comes from companies. We do have a lot of checks in that data, which go back to the companies. That's not to say we don't pick up a lot of the errors. Some of the interesting stuff is, as part of doing the graduation, which Braylon talked about, we did find some probably systemic issues in some companies' data that we've gone back to them with. Who knows what's happened when we tried to correct it before our graduation, but obviously it does rely on the company to come back and fix up their data. A lot of it's about how things have been allocated between, you know, agreed value indemnity and specified illness and others. So hopefully when that fixes up, that may change some of the figures over time.
So if I can just add, I think it's a really important job that you guys are doing. It's long overdue that a good disability table has been available in the market. As one of my colleagues noted, trying to predict, so the previous table, the 89-93 table, that was a midpoint of that was when the last World Cup, Cricket World Cup, was on in Australia. So trying to price a DI product today would be somewhat akin to trying to predict the World Cup winner based on the results in 1991 or 1992, which was Pakistan versus England in the final, if you remember. So.
Thank you for that most important information. Anyone else in the audience would like to comment on mortality or disability income experience? I was fascinated to see the contrast between mortality improvement in the population and the similar improvement in the insured life. And you've given us a lot of food for thought as to what the possible causes are. I have a question for, I guess more for the audience, but also for the speaker, is do you think there is a barrier to recording occupation for mortality rating? Because we've seen lots of peripheral evidence of that, but we don't seem as an industry to be open to using that one extra rating factor that seems significant elsewhere.
I'm John Dodsworth from Suncorp. Recording occupation for a retail product can have its difficulties. When someone will state their occupation, it's really their view of their job that they're doing. It's really a free-form text input to the data. If you try designing a big drop-down list of occupations, it becomes a big drop-down list, and it's very laborious to use. So it's difficult really to find a concise way of describing someone's occupation. But having said that though, with a lot of great text mining techniques that now exist, it might be that going back to free format textual description of occupations might be the way to go. This is all very academic. If that occupation is not being captured in the first place, if it's not a rating factor for the product, why would it be captured anyway? So there's a constraint there as well.
We have a thank you, John. But we have a room full of actuaries who can influence the rating. That's the question I'm asking.
Sorry, Nancy, just before you come in. I mean, the issue about capturing data now, I mean, majority of, a lot of the writers these days are using electronic underwriting engines or electronic applications to capture data. In a lot of cases, these forms are a bit generic between disability income and term insurance. And I don't know for sure. Maybe there's some people here who can answer it. I would have thought even for a term insurance product, the occupation is being captured in those underwriting engines. Whether it being allocated to a particular class obviously is a different issue because you don't need it as a rating variable of mortality. But I'm certainly hopeful that over time more of those actual occupations, and they do have drop-down lists that you have to select out of 1 out of 10,000 occupations. I mean, there's lists available from government agencies where the ABS uses, and I think most underwriting tools pick it. And it's just interesting to when you start looking at data, and there's been other sessions about data, about trying to get better data for analysis, that the information being captured by these underwriting systems, although they're not in your admin system, and that's a separate issue about how you link all these things together, it just gives you options to start looking at other rating variables. And to me, in a market which is so commoditized, the options of someone saying, hey, I think this particular occupation is good, I'm going to aim for that occupation or make a special offer for them to capture a bit more of that than the rest of the market, must be attractive to some people. Obviously, the very large players, it's like the smoke or non-smoke or preferred life issue, but obviously for others, you've got to think about special offers that go out.
Sorry. I think that's very true, Eddie. There's still a big disconnect between the claims database, the underwriting database and the administration database and what information is actually captured on lives that's not there for analytical purposes. I guess one of the challenges that's been talked about in a couple of the other presentations is that whilst last generation you had far more stability in occupation, these modern generations you're getting a lot more movement. And of course you're capturing occupation at outset of the policy, not necessarily occupation at time of death. And so one's a rating factor and one's a causal factor, which could be interesting. And maybe capturing both of those could be an interesting thing to see. I also was speaking with I think it's Martin Mocker, who's on the International Actuarial Association's Morbidity Mortality Committee, and they were doing a similar comparison of doing insured lives versus population experience in a number of countries as a way of potentially looking at the selection effects over time in different populations. So it may be worthwhile to extend this to then drag what the International Actuarial Association's been doing in their mortality experience and compare over time how has the difference between insured lives and population experience changed in Australia versus in other countries, because I think what we're probably seeing is that Australian insured lives are getting much closer to population, whereas the gap I think in other countries has maintained or extended. as the underwriting gets more sophisticated. So maybe we might see this as a good argument for increasing underwriting requirements, reducing non-medical limits. Who knows?
Do we have any comment from the audience about some of the hypothesis that was put up for the differences in mortality improvement between population and insured? Do we all agree? Are we all sold on Eddie's hypothesis? Take that as a yes.
Sorry.
I think she was slightly first. But only by a second.
Yeah, Jill Withers. I was just wondering whether you see or you think there'd be any impact from continuation options from group risk going into individual. I think my feeling is that all of those things that you've mentioned have obviously, you know, would have an impact. I think from a pricing perspective, it's been really, you know, quite difficult to, you know, to price all these changes to underwriting with any sort of, you know, feel, any sort of science behind it. So anyway, I just wondered whether what your view is on continuation options or whether it's just too small at the moment to have any impact.
So firstly, most companies can't identify their continuation options, so unfortunately we couldn't exclude that from our data. However, this data was on the non-master trust portion of the data that we get. And generally, the continuation options, they continue into the master trust element of a lot of companies' portfolios. So I would suspect that there are continuation options in there, but I think that most of it would be going into the master trust. What I'm interested in is, you know, how relevant do people think that this sort of analysis is, I guess? On one sense, it's like, well, is this just sort of a very academic little actuarial exercise that we've undertaken? Because, okay, well, we're not getting the mortality improvement through, but we're not pricing for it, so there's no problem, right? And what was in my mind, I guess, when we were doing this was that mortality is the easiest place to see some of these things. Like, we've talked about underwriting standards changing. We've talked about very theoretically saying, oh, well, this is happening. But then, as you said, Jill, we don't know what the impact is. And so my thinking was, well, let's try and look at it for mortality, which is such a sort of discrete bit of the portfolio. It doesn't have, you know, the changes in terms and conditions that you've seen in the other products. You have a nice, I guess, benchmark in the population to try and get an understanding of, well, what's happening. And if we're not seeing greater improvements than mortality, than population that we have in the past, in fact, if we're seeing less, then is that indicating that the portfolio is actually sort of comparatively getting worse at about, you know, 2% a year? And what does that mean for trauma? What does it mean for TPD? What does it mean for IP, all these other conditions where we've pretty much made the same changes in terms of underwriting standards, etc.? So that, I guess, was my thinking in the sense that it wasn't, for me, it was an interesting way of trying to get an understanding of what those issues, what the impact of those issues might be.
If I can just put it in terms of a session earlier yesterday, what is missing in our thinking that might assist us from pricing better, and what rating factors are we missing that we're not even considering at the moment? Those are the questions that raise in my mind this analysis. And Paul, do you have a question?
Well, I can make a couple of observations. I mean, firstly, I would say that in some of the experiences that we have reviewed, my hypothesis has been more that it's been a deterioration in underwriting standards and selection. And this is really more based on things like cardiovascular have been improving for the last 15 to 20 years, and the rate of change doesn't appear to have been moving. So it's not like I think in the last 5 or 6 years that rate has changed much. I am also concerned that when we look at the data, a lot of the kind of optionality that is within the products, and whether like buyback options and stuff like that, you just don't get the data. So I don't know whether those things are improving, you know, increasing in proportion, decreasing in proportion, etc. And it's also distorting a lot of the selection type analysis that you may do. In the disability side, most of our observation has been consistent more with the Munich view. We are seeing termination rates have basically stabilised, but incident rates continue to deteriorate. The only hypothesis that I could see here is that the termination rates have not deteriorated, mainly because of the increase in accidents, and they may be of relatively shorter duration. So one thing I haven't really been able to analyse is whether if you take like-for-like of accident versus sickness, are we actually seeing a deterioration in termination rates for sickness, for example? But the proportion of accidents are increasing, which means that on average it's stabilised. What I haven't been able to really understand is the, and you showed it, is the deterioration in trauma and why that's deteriorated. So I can sit there and say TPD, we know, the legal representation. Yes, a lot of the claims that are coming from, you know, extended durations, you know, the economy is deteriorating, but I wouldn't have thought, you know, cancer increases in economic downturns. So interested to see if you have any view of what's driving the deterioration in trauma rates.
Yeah, the trauma's a fascinating one, isn't it? I've talked to a lot of companies in the industry about that result, and no one's got a nice little answer for me, unfortunately. There's a couple of theories. It is, a lot of it is cancer-driven, actually. And so there are some theories that, bizarrely enough, when you have the economic downturn, trauma does increase because people talk to their financial advisor a bit more, and he sort of get the insight that, oh, they do have that policy, remember, and it does cover you in this condition, so go claim on it. So I know that there's a lot of controversy over whether that's a valid thought or not, but yeah, I don't have an answer for that one, unfortunately.
I mean, the only other thing on trauma is obviously definitions keep changing. People, normally products getting more lenient, although sometimes I did see a cancer product go the other way. And obviously a lot of the carcinoma in situ types benefits come in. We do rely on what people are coding the claims are. Some people are much better than others in that regard. And so sometimes when you wonder with people adding carcinoma in situ benefits, whether they're actually putting it as a cancer benefit or in one of the other categories. But I mean, I think in looking at other companies in the past, there's always been a bit of a slow trend up in trauma, whether our one's just a big catch up and steady's going to steady off again, who knows.
If I could add to that, yeah, detection rates from due to improvements in technology and benefit definitions, I think it's our view, it's the majority of it. And if you really want to get scared, go to session 8G coming up next, where you'll find out what we think about the future, and that's not pretty for trauma either. There's just one other point I want to make. I think I'm a little bit nervous about our reliance on the repricing right to cover deterioration in trends that we expect. We already have YRT products, so the premium increases over time as you get older. We have automatic inflation adjustments, so the premium increases as you get older. Those two already produce maybe a 10% increase. I think we have underpricing. We might have misshapen curves as well. So if on top of that we're layering in future deterioration that we know to be there, rather than having a price curve that goes up, we have a price curve that goes up with age and with inflation, and then we have to jump up to the next curve as we allow for the next trend, and then we end up with a very steep climb, which clearly results in the selective lapsation that we're seeing, which we think is one of the drivers for increasing claim due to sickness by duration. So I don't think that's a good solution. This product is broken.
Well, if there isn't any more, I will ask you to join me in thanking Rylan and Eddie for their very informative presentation.